Hello. Hello, welcome to the Kadampa Center. My name is Lamo.
Hi.
In a moment, Venerable Trishula will be coming in to give the teachings. If you've never been to the center, if you will stand when she enters, and you'll see people prostrating, and if you feel uncomfortable doing so, you can just remain standing. And then we'll be saying some prayers in the gold prayer book. We got rid of the white prayer books. And let's see. The first one is on page 183, Shakyamuni Buddhist Mantra. Then the Four Measurables, page 34 in English and 37 in Tibetan. And so are the two mantras that we have, Chenrezig and Tam mantras. But I will remind you as we do these. This morning, Trikula gave a wonderful talk on impermanence and also aspiration, and I'll introduce some, of course, some guests, videos, especially His Holiness, and so I think you can really look forward to a wonderful and inspiring teaching today. And she also welcomes people to make comments. And people are streaming, so if you would please wait for us to pass the this mic, because no matter how loud you speak, even if everyone in this room can hear, the people online cannot hear anything. And many people can't want to come, but they're not able to. So it would be, you know, we want them to be part of this the classroom setting. So, okay. So let's just get ready and set our minds to receive the teachings. If you have cell phones, if you please put them on vibrate, put the sound down to low or nothing.
Hello, my name is Joey Gooch. I'm the facility manager. Just got a brief announcement. Our grounds day yesterday got rained out. So if you're interested in kind of helping out with the grounds, gardening, landscaping, yard work, whatever, we got a shed to assemble and so forth. We're going to be meeting this coming Saturday, our makeup rain day. Cool. Thank you.
So if you please turn to page 183 in the gold prayer book. Then towards the bottom you see this mantra. So let's chant this mantra three times. Taya ta om mune mune Maha Munaye Soha Tayata Mune Mune Maha Munaye Soha Tayata Mune Mune Maha Munaye Soha. Now let's turn to page 34. Let's see, where's 34? And let's read the Four Measurables in English. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. Okay, and then turn to page 37. And let's chant the Four Measurables in Tibetan. San Chen Tam Chede Wadam Dewe Gyudam Dempa Dewa Dhammi Dewa Juchi Nyerim Chadam Nidam Dewe Tanyom La Right below, you see Chen Rezig's mantra, Green Taurus mantra. So let's say Chen Rezig's mantra 8 times and Green Taurus 7 times. And let's think about people who are on the prayer list and people, those in your hearts and minds.
Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum. 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 Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Soha. 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 Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Soha.
Phew. Good morning, everyone. Welcome. Nice to see everyone here. My name is Chuki, for anyone who doesn't know me. So, real happy that y'all are here today. I always like to start by rejoicing about how amazing it really is that we're all here today, all the causes that came together for these conditions for us to be here, you know. We're so fortunate that Don Brown, our founder, went to India and met his teachers and came back here and then wanted to start something and then got permission to start Kadampa Center almost 25 years ago now, and then all the yoga studios and places that allowed the center folks to meet in the early days, and then the basement that we were in, and then all the people that, you know, helped fund and build. There's a lot of physical work in creating this space here, and on and on, you know, the fact that Lama Zopa Rinpoche is our spiritual director and that Geshe Gelug has been teaching us for 15 years. I mean, it's all these amazing things that led to us being able to be here right now all together. So many people and so much effort. And then we all decided this morning to get up and come here, you know. So from our side, too, we're making this happen. So just rejoice about how this is really rare and precious, and I hope that this hour together create something positive for each one of us. So I'd like to begin just with a very short 2-minute breathing meditation. Most of you will be familiar with this if you've been coming. If not, for new folks, I'll just very briefly describe it. And if you have questions, definitely feel free to come see me or Lama La or anyone afterwards who might actually be able to fill you in. We'd be happy to. This is a breathing meditation. One of the reasons why we use the breath is because it's always with us. We don't have to remember to bring it, so it's an easy tool. And, you know, there's several reasons for doing these kinds of meditations, but one of them is that this meditation is great for putting our mind in neutral. So if we've got a lot of agitated mind or angry or, you know, any kind of negative thing going on there, this is a good meditation to help bring us to neutral. So then after this, we can do other things that try to create positive. It's awfully hard to go straight from negative to positive, so this helps us get to that neutral place. So the way this works is you start on the exhale and you breathe out, and then you breathe in and you count one. And then you breathe out and you breathe in, you count two. And you just keep going like that as long as you can sort of keep that thread. And at some point, you'll probably lose it because that's the way our minds are. And so you'll start thinking about where you're going to go have lunch or, you know, whatever's coming up next. And when you notice you're doing that, just very gently, kindly go, oh, back to one. We'll just do that for maybe 2 or 3 minutes and just sort of keep track of how far you get. So the main thing is there is a particular 7-point posture, things like that, but just to highlight the main point, it's to keep your back straight. And so some people talk about stacking a set of coins, or like if there's a balloon attached to the top of your head, a helium balloon that sort of pulls you your spine up. But that's the main thing, just to keep your back straight. So we'll just start with the exhale and then breathe in and count one, and we'll do that for maybe 2 or 3 minutes. I'll ring this little chime when we're done. Thanks for playing along. Yeah. So when Geshe-la is away, Sarah Brooks, the spiritual program coordinator, has asked us to lead these classes on the 16 guidelines. And so I wanted to give just a little intro to that in case people aren't familiar with what that means. Spiritual director, Lama Zopa Rinpoche, who's the spiritual director for some 165 FPMT centers across the world. We're one of them. He was here in May, just before he led the Light of the Path retreat that we organized in Black Mountain. And he asked us at that time if we were using any of the, universal education, tools. And the answer to that is yes. 16 guidelines is one of the main pillars of that. And it's also the 16 guidelines are one of the main, focuses for the curriculum for the children's program that we have here. So Sarah, the spiritual program coordinator, when she was in, there's a big meeting the FPMT has every year, and she went this year last month in Australia, and she said there they mentioned that one of the 5 pillars of FPMT is this universal education. So it's something that's really a key part of the FPMT wisdom culture, as they call it. So the 16 guidelines come from Tibet quite a long time ago, 7th or 8th century, I'm not quite sure, King Dzongtsen Gampa, and they're, you know, just sort of good ideas that cross most religions, you know, respect, kindness, you know, things like that. So there's 16 of them. And they're broken up into 4 categories of 4 guidelines each, and so they're called the themes. So the first theme is how we think, and the second is how we act, the third is how we relate, and the fourth one is how we find meaning. And so today we're going to be talking about how we find meaning, and in particular, aspiration is the theme for today. As an introduction to how we find meaning, they talk about impermanence as an important part of understanding that. So I'm going to start out talking about impermanence, and then we're going to talk about aspiration, and hopefully those will weave together in a way that makes sense. So y'all will be the judge of that. So looking at impermanence, so, you know, when we just think of that word in English, sort of what it means, you know, that things don't last, right? So from a Buddhist point of view, that's also sort of how we're looking at it, that, you know, things are always changing. So even in really subtle ways, right, like this cup is different than when it was first purchased. Now, it might look just the same. We might not be able to point at it, but maybe the paint's a little more worn, or maybe there's a chip in the lid or something like that. If I were to take this cup and throw it on the ground, you'd have a much different sense that, yeah, it was different than when you walked in the room, right? But without even those big ways of things change, everything's changing all the time, right? And so sometimes that can be kind of scary for us, right? Things are changing maybe, and we feel like we're losing our footing, or we don't like the way they're changing. But whether it's good or bad, you know, the truth is everything is changing all the time, and that's unstoppable. That's sort of a law of nature. So I think that part of why impermanence leads into this section of how we find meaning, if we're talking about the 16 guidelines, is that they talk about it in this way that I really like. They say that you have to have a willingness to explore something new, and sometimes that means something uncomfortable if you want to find meaning. And even the fact that we call it a path, you know, that implies it's leading to some new territory, right? So I kind of like the language that they used around that. So I'm going to lead a short meditation here on impermanence that comes from the 16 guidelines. Oh, and by the way, this book on 16 guidelines, if you're interested in learning more, is available in our bookstore. You can also download a PDF of it for free. So if you want more information about that, just ask me. But this is a short guided meditation. It'll only be about 5 minutes. And in case you've never done a guided meditation before, just follow along as best you can. I'll try to pause at certain places to give you a few moments to think about things. It's just going a little deeper into what I just mentioned, but in a way where it's not me just blah, 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 but it actually gives you a chance to sort of reflect on it a little bit. And if you get distracted and you know, start thinking about the work you got to do on Monday or whatever it is that pulls you away, just whenever you notice, come back and join us where we are. It's no problem. So, so again, just a reminder that if you have your back straight, that kind of helps with the clarity a little bit. And let's go ahead and just take a couple of deep breaths again to get centered. Okay, so now start by bringing your awareness to your body, thinking about what it's made of, the different parts, you know, your skin, the blood, the bones, the organs. So your body has these parts, and then in turn those parts have smaller parts like cells. And all the cells have the smaller parts of atoms. And atoms are made up of these subatomic particles, and so on. So reflect on how all these cells are moving, changing, dividing, and dying. And try to feel the energy movement within your body. Now take this awareness outside of yourself, reflecting on things in the room, the floor, the cushions, the chairs. Everything around you is also made up of tiny particles. and these particles are constantly changing from 1 millisecond to the next. Open your senses to the world, listen to its dynamic energy, and observe its constant process of transformation. Now widen your awareness to include the billions of people and animals on the planet. And they have bodies that are also moving and changing. Observe the concrete cities, countryside, mountains, and sea. The sun, the moon, the stars, the clouds. Can you find anything that is static? So next, imagine pushing a stop button. Suddenly the world becomes still as a statue. Everything comes to a halt. What would this be like? And now think about yourself. You too have come to a standstill. What effect would it have on your mind, your body, your behavior? How could you dream, learn, or grow? How could you fulfill your dreams and aspirations? So now release the stop button. Everything starts moving again, and you've regained your freedom. Ponder the idea, if everything is changing, anything is possible. If everything is changing, anything is possible. Now bring your attention back. All right, thanks. So, some of you may know that I love videos. And so I'm using a few today to help illustrate some points. So I've got just a short, it's a less than 3 minute video that kind of presents a different perspective on impermanence. So, if Chromecast is willing, I'm going to show it to you here.
These are roughly 28,835 jelly beans. I counted out 500 of them and used those to weigh the rest. In this pile, there's one jelly bean for each day that the average American will live. You might have more beans in your life, or maybe less, but on average, this is the time we have. Here's a single bean. It's your very first day. A special day, but kind of a rough day on everyone involved. Add 364 more, and you have the first year of your life. Now, for a sense of scale, here are your first 15 years. 5,475 days. Which brings us to the threshold of adulthood, and at that moment, this is the time that we have left. And this is, on average, what we will do with all that time. We will be asleep for a total of 8,477 days. If we're lucky, some of that time we'll be sleeping next to someone we love. We will be in the process of eating, drinking, or preparing food for 1,635 days. We will be at work, hopefully doing something satisfying, for the equivalent of 3,202 of those days. 1,099 days will be spent commuting or traveling from one place to another, maybe a little bit more if you live in L.A. On average, we will watch television in one form or another for a total of 2,676 days. Household activities, like chores and tending to our pets and shopping, will take another 1,576 days. And we will care for the needs and well-being of others, our friends and family, for 564 days. We'll spend 671 days bathing, grooming, and doing all other bathroom-related activities. And another 720 days will go to community activities, like religious and civic duties, charities, and taking classes. After we remove all those beans, this is what remains. This is the time that we have left. Time for laughing, swimming, making art, going on hikes, text messages, reading, checking Facebook, playing softball, maybe even teaching yourself how to play the guitar. So what are you going to do with this time? How much of it do you think you've already used up? If you only had half of it, what would you do differently? What about half of that? How much time have you already spent worrying instead of doing something that you love? What if you just had one more day? What are you going to do today?
Okay. You know, in Buddhism we talk about one of the reasons why we look at impermanence and think about this kind of stuff is that it can serve as a motivation, right, to recognize that with whatever time we have, we want to use it, you know, in a conscious way as opposed to, you know, just phoning it in or whatever. To me, this really gets at that idea of if everything is changing, anything is possible. I'm wondering if anyone has any thoughts about that or just anything that struck them from the video. Anybody want to share anything? And it's kind of hard to get it going the first time. By the end, you're all going to be like, pick me, pick me. Yeah, thanks, Ron.
I think the thing that struck me about impermanence meditation was that if it were not for impermanence, really, it seems like nothing would be possible.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I were, and everything was to stop and just to be static, there would really be no possibility. Nothing that anybody ever hopes for or dreams about or wants to accomplish would ever occur.
Yeah, that's really an excellent point. Yeah, for me, when I do that meditation, that when everything stops and it's all frozen in time, that's kind of scary. It's not comforting at all for me. Yeah, Keith, there's several mics around.
I had seen that before, and I think what struck me was when you start from all the jelly beans and you get down to just the one, you can really do a lot with just that one day and that one bean.
Yeah.
That stretches quite a ways, and I just wanted to share that.
Yeah, so that's a great point. And if you think about that whole pile is just one bean over and over again, right? And so if we looked at each bean with the specificity of looking at the final bean, right, what could be accomplished? What could we do? Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah. Anybody else? Yeah, Elise.
To combine what Ron and Kevin both said, I think that it's really important to recognize that everything is impermanent, as you were saying in the meditation, and that you can choose to feel badly that things are, you think of impermanence and changing as a deterioration, or you can think of it as an evolution, I know, a change into something more positive, even if it might look negative.
Yeah.
So taking that one bean at a time, is that going to be a bean of deterioration, or a being of evolution.
That's really wonderful because, of course, from the Buddhist perspective, our perspective on it is so important, right? And so we've got another video coming up later that actually uses the phrase, you can cry about it or you can dance about it, right? And so seeing it as evolution is a much more positive way, right? Yeah, that's great, Elise. Thank you. Yeah, okay. So now that we've got this basis, let's talk a little bit about aspiration and what that means. So when I was looking at this topic and preparing for today, I kept getting stuck on what's the difference between inspiration and aspiration. And I really wanted to understand what 16 guidelines had to say about that. And I'm fortunate that I live with my sister, and she is very involved with the universal education has going way back and has done a lot of trainers and now is a trainer herself in some of these topics. So you might actually see her leading something on 16 guidelines here soon. But anyway, so I asked her that question. And so she helped me kind of get clear about, from the 16 guidelines point of view, what are they really meaning about aspiration? And so it's kind of like the inspiration comes first, right? And then aspiration is taking an intention, sort of the next step. And maybe even putting it with the joyful effort right before it becomes action. You know, that would be it. So I've got some examples to help, you know, flesh this out a little bit. So, you know, aspiration is the fuel for the change, and it's the call to action. So we're talking about it in a very specific way. You know, you could aspire to be a robber and use mindfulness to be this great cat burglar, right? I mean, these terms aren't in and of themselves wholesome or positive. But if the aspiration is to find meaning, like we're talking about in this section, then that becomes something, you know, that's moving us in a positive direction. So one thing that helped me sort of tease this out or understand it better is, so at the beginning, Lama La led us in the Four Immeasurables prayer. That's the may all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. So there's a version of that prayer that's a little bit expanded. So it takes all four of those and gives each one four lines. So it's 16 lines total in this expanded prayer. And we use it sometimes in Guru Puja, some of the other prayers that we do, some of the other practices. And it goes like this. How wonderful it would be if all sentient beings had happiness and the causes of happiness. May they have happiness and its causes. I myself will cause them to have these. Please, Guru Buddha, bless me to be able to do this. So sort of with each line of that, it becomes a stronger aspiration, right? Because first it's like, yeah, it'd be great if this happened. Then may it really happen. And then may I cause it to happen. And then may I have the tools so I can make it happen. You know, it gets stronger and stronger with each step. So I hope that's helpful in understanding a little bit about this idea of aspiration, about what we're going to be talking about. And so, you know, if you're thinking about, may I alone be the cause for all beings to be happy, that's kind of a big ask. Right? That's a big thing. So, I think one of the things that I always need to do is to break things down in a way so that I can feel like I can do them. You know, if they're too big, it's just overwhelming. It's sort of, how do you get a foothold? Where would you even start? And it can be discouraging, right? But if you think about someone that, you know, inspires you, or someone that you would label as great in whatever way, whether it's in sports or, you know, scholarship or any way that you can think of greatness by your definition, probably they got there through a lot of small steps over and over again, right? It's rare that it was a flip of a switch that they became whatever it is that you admire about them. So so I had a video I wanted to show, but the sound quality on it's not so good, so I'll just describe it. It won't quite do it justice, but there's a young boy learned how to ride his bike, and some of you might have seen this because this became a viral video, but it's the moment after he's just gotten off after riding the first time, and his dad's videoing him, interviewing him, asking him, you know, what do you have to tell all the kids who want to learn how to ride a bike? And he said, you can do it. You just have to keep trying. If you keep trying, you can ride a bike, you know. And he's just so joyful about it, you know. And one of the things that Geshe-la had been teaching on quite a bit before he left was this not just do, happy to do. I don't know how many of you might have heard that. You know, I kind of miss that weekly encouragement from Geshe-la while he's gone. But really, if we can, you know, conjoin this idea of what we want to do with this joyful effort to get it done, right, that's then putting aspiration actually into action in a joyful way. And so maybe we all could think about the first time we rode a bike or whatever it is that we can remember, just the pure joy of being successful at trying, you know, having an idea, working at it, and then achieving it. So so this idea about role models, I'm thinking it might be useful. Think in your mind of someone that you consider a role model, or someone who inspires you, or someone you aspire to be like. Think of a real, you know, real example. And then think about what it is that you admire about them, what that characteristic or characteristics are. In my case, it used to be Lance Armstrong. And then I was so defeated. But I love the determination, you know, that he had. And so I'm wondering if anybody might want to share an example of someone that comes to mind for them and what that characteristic is. Yeah? Anybody? Yeah, Jill. Mama, okay. Oh, sorry.
It's really quirky, so I'm going to embarrass myself in front of everybody. So I ask my friends a lot about this. So mine, I tell them, so they get an example, is, and I haven't seen the movie in a long time, so I can't even exactly remember why, but Juliette Binoche.
Yeah.
You talk a lot. There was something about the way she just seemed to be so okay with what everybody was doing and how they were doing it, and the peacefulness, and she just seemed cool about it all. So that was my, I use that when I need to feel like that.
Yeah. Well, and that's an excellent point, that one of the advantages of having these people in mind that inspire us is that they can actually help us make different choices when we recognize, oh, wait, if I want to be like that, I got to do this to act like that, right? And we often hear that in terms of sports, right? You know, if you want to be like Michael Jordan, you got to practice, right? And that's true. And I think it can also be, if you want to be peaceful, you got to do some things to cultivate the ability to be peaceful when you need to call on it, right? And you can fake it till you make it. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's a great example. Thanks. Anybody else have one? Okay. Oh, yeah, in the back.
Bill Murray.
Bill Murray. Yeah, Sharon, what's the characteristic?
I was just reading an article about him in Rolling Stone before I came, but just kind of calling the shots, like being in the moment. This is what I'm going to do now, and I'm going to make, just be creative in every moment.
Yeah.
And enjoy it.
Yeah.
With other people.
Yeah. Oh, that's wonderful. That ties in with, in the first session, someone had mentioned a teacher who always was using, like, to judge himself, his rubric was he seeing his students' eyes shine? You know, and it's kind of like that. Like every moment you're thinking, am I really being present? Am I helping people, you know, in this moment with whatever it is that I can bring, you know? And in a way, I think that's not too far of a stretch to build on what you said. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks. Oh, yeah. One last one. Yeah, Carol.
So I actually have a couple who I find very inspirational.
Yeah.
That come here, and they're the Strievels. And I find Elise and David, I think they're in here. They're kind of who I want to be when I grow up.
Yeah.
And they're just so warm and hospitable and generous and loving. And
oh, that's really wonderful. Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting, in the first session we had a similar thing where someone pointed out someone else in the room. You know, it's like we really can be each other's inspirations and we can learn so much from each other. So this community is so precious, you know. I really appreciate all of you for making it be a community. So that's really great. Yeah. Well, I'm now going to do a video from my favorite guest teacher, His Holiness the Dalai Lama. And this video will run for about 7.5 minutes, and then we'll do a little Q&A afterwards. So, okay. So, His Holiness is clearly talking about thinking in the long term, right, about change. Billions of eons, that's got to be a long time. but he says it doesn't matter. So what do you think about that? I mean, is it hard to keep consistent effort day to day? Like, if we see progress over decades, is that good enough for us? Yeah, what do y'all think about what His Holiness is saying? Yeah.
I feel that now because of social media, everything is like instant gratification.
Mm, yeah.
There's so many people that are achieving like viral videos, and that start in a mass, people start valuing themselves for what they achieve and in terms of what other people see them doing. But they forget to look at themselves like in an everyday base. And every action, every positive action that you do every single day is valuable as well, even if nobody's looking at it, if nobody's praising.
Yeah.
And I think people lose that a lot.
Yeah.
It's been losing that a lot.
Yeah, so you're making a great point that sort of being positive in a consistent way, or whatever positive action you do, whether it's seen or not, whether it's acknowledged or not, whether other people value it or not, from its own side, that has value and worth and is important. Yeah, yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, anyone else? Oh, yeah.
I think in combination with the jelly bean one, what comes to my mind is prioritization.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm so easily focused. Let's say I'm not a multitasker, so whatever I'm doing completely. And as a result, I can get distracted. So I can't watch TV and have a conversation with people. Consequently, I don't watch TV. I work out of my home, so I don't commute. So you would think there are all these extra jelly beans. but in fact, I have a very demanding job, and so I end up working these long 12-hour days during the week in which there's no focus on my purpose, my inspiration, my daily practice. And so when he talks about the importance of having that daily focus, mm-hmm. and really staying consistent throughout the week, to me that's an issue of prioritization. And if I look at how my life is not in balance, where do I want to invest the time that I have here and now?
Yeah, I think that's a wonderful observation, you know, and like you said, when you put that, His Holiness's teaching in combination with the jelly beans, it really hits home that there is only a certain number. We don't know the number of jelly beans, but there is a finite number, right? And we will run out of them at some point. Yeah, yeah, that's really a great point. Does anybody remember, His Holiness said sort of near the beginning what the purpose of life, what the meaning of life was? Did anybody catch that? Yeah, he said it is to utilize something positive. Then it doesn't matter how long it takes. All of it is meaningful, right? And so that's getting to your point. And, you know, that's something that even over time, as long as you know you've been putting in the positivity, then maybe it really doesn't matter how long it takes. You know, Geshe will talk about that, you know, the bodhisattvas who strive untiringly, you know, through difficult conditions, but for them, it's joyful, you know. So that's a place we might aspire to be. Yeah. Yeah. Anybody else have thoughts on sort of how they keep themselves motivated? Yeah, Patrick.
I just had a thought of, and I related to the idea of working 12 hours a day and so on, is that one of the things that I thought about and tried to get in the frame of mind is that you're thinking about how I am benefited by the efforts of others, and to think of every job as being something that people are doing for the benefit of others,
mm-hmm.
so that to have that motivation and that awareness, so that even if it seems like a job that is boring or underpaid or whatever, I mean, there's a lot of positive things that are involved in that, rather than thinking of it as just something that is taking time away from thinking about the Dharma or thinking about helping others or doing something else. So that's one way that I sort of find useful in sort of getting out of that thing of feeling like, well, if I'm doing this, I can't be doing that, and so it's interfering with what I should be doing.
Yeah, that's really wonderful too. You know, the idea of if you set an intention before you start any task, no matter how mundane, if the intention is sincerely to be a benefit to yourself and others, then that turns it into the Dharma. And Lama La actually made that point in the first session. She was talking about no matter what you're doing, you know, whether you're, I forget some of your examples, driving, brushing your teeth. What all did you say?
Yeah, mostly driving, brushing your teeth.
Yeah. You know, whatever it is, if the intention is to be a benefit, you know. I mean, before you get in the car to come here this morning, you could set the intention, may drive to be a benefit, because you're coming here to work on your mind, you know, to get some tools to be kinder to the people in your life, you know, those kinds of things. So, yeah, those are wonderful points. So another thing that His Holiness mentioned here is that, you know, making the teachings part of your life as opposed to just knowledge is really key to making any kind of progress, right? He said, you know, one day without that is too long, right, is what he was saying. So what are some ways, you know, Geshe-la talks about this too, you know, getting it from here to here, right? That's where a lot of the work is. You know, you can come and you can learn the stuff. Or the example I gave in the first class, you know, you can know that there are 6 of these and 8 of those and recite off the 12 of these, but if you're a jerk at work, you know, what have you really gained? I mean, you got a list, you know. Maybe you put some positive, you know, imprints in your mind, but so how do we do that? How do we get it from something that we talk about to something that we actually try to do? Does anybody have any tricks or tools? Yeah, Dorothy.
I have a problem with not being focused a lot, so my phone is used as a tool now that we all have them right next to us or attached to us, and there'll be certain times of the day it'll go off and has a certain sound to it that says, stop, you know, to make me stop and focus and to take a moment and to just say some mantras in that moment. And that noise on my phone makes me go, oh, I got to say my mantras. I got to reset my mind. So that's a new trick that I have just recently, because with a 3-year-old, my brain is always not focused like it used to be. So,
yeah, so making good use of the technology that, you know, can be the distractor or the negative, right? But if we can use it for positive, use our power for good, not evil. Yeah. Yeah. In the back. Yeah.
Going back to the inspiration, aspiration.
Yeah.
For me, inspiration comes from outside. It's an outside force that you can take or reject. And aspiration comes from inside you.
Oh, yeah.
It's the wanting to make that inspiration become a part of your life. And the way I get through bad days is I try talking about the beans. I pretend like I only have one bean every day. And every day is the first day and the last day of my life.
Yeah.
And if I get angry with someone, is that how I want to spend my first day or my last day?
Yeah.
And it really, I wish I could take credit for that. It came from a Benedictine monk.
Yeah.
But it really is a quick, easy thing to focus on when life starts sending you this way, that way, every which way.
Yeah. So there's 2 great points there. One, I really appreciate the aspiration being an internally generated idea. Yeah. And then this idea of, you know, if every day were really your first and last day, what would that look like? And if you apply that as you go through each day, you probably have many fewer regrets, I would think. Yeah. Yeah, thank you for sharing that. Yeah. Anyone else? Wow, uncharacteristically quiet group today. Yeah, Joey.
I think reviewing the day's activities at the end of the day kind of gets me refocused and kind of see what I need to do for the next day. Whether I've done something good, I'm kind of happy about it. If I haven't done something good, I try to change it and do something better.
Yeah, yeah. That's a really wonderful technique. And in fact, Lama Zopa Rinpoche has created one tool to help us do that. If anybody's interested in learning more about that, I can tell you where you can find that on the website. But it's basically taking a daily inventory, going through some specific questions to sort of check it in and seeing how you're doing. So, yeah, I think that's a really great point, Joey. Yeah. Yeah. Microphone. Up here. Yeah.
I don't know if it's a question or something that it happened to me a couple times, but taking for that instance to live every day like if it's your last one or it's your first, but last one, so it makes so much meaningful that moment or that the event that, of that day. And if things doesn't work out, you end up feeling sad because maybe this will be your last Halloween or your last birthday and it didn't go as positive or so, or as you expected. So that's side too that maybe for me I need to work on, because sometimes I feel sad that it didn't go as well.
Yeah.
It's like, what if this is my last one and I really want to enjoy every single day, and if it didn't come as positive, you know, maybe you lost the chance to have another one.
Yeah, so I think you're making a great point that if any of these tools add to your suffering, then it's not the right tool for you at this time, right? Because if it feels like it adds pressure to try one of these tools, like even in Dorothy's example, it's like every time that went off, I was busy, and then that made me feel worse about myself because I never got to it, right? I mean, so we got to be skillful in the tools that we choose, and so any one of them could sort of cut both directions, right? So one of the tricks might be if you employ that technique of this is my last day, and you think about the things that maybe didn't go exactly how you'd want, look at, well, where were my attachments to that? What can I learn about attachments? So the next time I have a day, if it truly isn't the last day, right? So tomorrow when you wake up, you can say, okay, how can I be a little less attached to the outcome or whatever? I mean, you know, there's lots of ways to look at it. I don't want to try to act like I'm telling you how to reframe it. But whatever way you could reframe it for yourself so that it's still a learning experience and not just a way to feel, you know, like you weren't perfect or you weren't successful, you know, because that's certainly not the point. It's not to give us more ways to feel bad about ourselves. That's you know, that's the opposite of where we're trying to go. Yeah, so that's a really good point, though, to raise that question and say, okay, I know for me, I've been in classes where there's been a teaching and it was, for whatever reason, not a good resonance with me. That doesn't mean I say it's a bad teaching, right? But I put it on the shelf until later and I look at it again, because sometimes I found those teachings then are helpful after I maybe learned a little bit more or got a little better at some piece of whatever, you know. In the beginning, you know, to try to just sort of even just keep my mouth shut when I was angry was almost too hard, you know. So then to expect me to actually think positive thoughts about the other person or something, that was like 3 steps from where I was or 20 steps from where I was. It wasn't a practical tool, you know. But then if you get better at maybe not being angry in a moment, it might really help to think nice thoughts about the other person. You know, so these things need to be about timing and where we are. So it's a really good point. Yeah. So, last one back here. No, it's good. Good.
I was just going to say I'm really not good at making lists and doing stuff like that. So I made a commitment to act rather than react. And that's just been very helpful. I'm not always really good at it, but if I sit there and I say, okay, this is being put before me, I'm not going to react to it, I'm going to step back and I'm going to act purposely, then it helps me step back and reevaluate the teachings, reevaluate how I really want this to come out, and I don't feel a shamefulness about taking that time back. Like,
yeah.
Oh, I shouldn't have done that, or oh, I got angry. It's not a blame thing, it's just step back, I'm going to act rather than react.
Yeah. So giving yourself permission to take a step back.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds like that's a really helpful technique for you, and I bet for a lot of us. Yeah, that's a wonderful example. Yeah. And, you know, really, I mean, what's great is there's a lot of different tools that will work for us at different times in different situations, you know, and being able to learn to find the ones that are helpful. And that you made a good point. You said, I don't always do it, right? Well, we try, right? And anytime we're learning something new, we're not going to get it 100% just because we made up our mind. We might have the aspiration. That's not the same as a skillful action, right? That's a few steps down. So having the aspiration to do it and then applying it from time to time, that's worth rejoicing about, you know, really. Instead of beating ourselves up for the three times we didn't apply it when we thought we should have, rejoice about the two times we did. You know, that's progress. That's really wonderful. So thank you for sharing that. Yeah, so I have one more video. This one's another short one. And this one is really about sort of making an aspiration, and then actually, you know, doing something. Make this stop. That's how I can make it stop. Sorry. So that's Kid President. We've all been pep talked. So just to conclude then today, thank you all for your attention, and I've got one final little exercise for us. But just to recap first, so everything's changing all the time, right? And this can be the cause of sadness and suffering, or it can be hope, depending on how we look at it. We can cry about it, or we can dance about it. If we didn't have impermanence, then we wouldn't have aspiration and all these other things. And by identifying that to which we aspire, then we get a roadmap, right? And so committing to take the first small steps is where we can make the change. So in order to take a look at that, if you'd all just play along one last time, we'll just do about a 1 minute meditation. And just take a moment and think about a personal aspiration. It could be anything that you have that's meaningful to you. And just pick one. And then break that down into just one small concrete step that you could take to begin to enact that goal. And then set a realistic time frame for taking that first small step. And then if you're so inclined, and only if you're so inclined, commit to yourself to actually make that first step happen in that time frame you just set. Okay, and bring your attention back. So, homework if you want it, and no worries if you don't. So let's just rejoice about any positive merit that we created by being here together and thinking about these things. And, you know, as you make your way out into your week, just think about, you know, well, the way I look at things is this is all kind of a grand experiment. We try something, we get the feedback. If it worked, we try to do more of it. If it didn't, we try to figure out what to change, you know. So if you can maybe heighten that awareness a little bit this week and just sort of see what's working and what isn't, then that would be a week well spent. So thank you so much for your time. I know that Mama Law can lead us in a couple of prayers if you don't mind. And I always like to close with this final quote by His Holiness: be kind whenever possible. It's always possible. So thank you so much for your attention today. Okay, so if you turn to page 246 in the Goal Book, let's read Master Shantideva's dedication. 246. May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness, and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be free from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world. Then turn to page 273. I'll read those two prayers. In the land encircled by snow mountains, you are the source of all happiness and good. All-powerful Chenrezig Tenzin Gyatso, please remain until samsara ends. Savior of the snowland teachings and transmigratory beings, who extensively clarifies the path that unifies emptiness and compassion, to the lotus in the hand, Lord Tenzin Gyatso, I beseech, may all your holy wishes be fulfilled. And then back to page 245, 245 and 244. So the long life prayer for Jime Ken Rinpoche, Jetsun Losandela.
The one who mastered his speech at a very young age, the one with great patience who received the name Avatara, the one with great precision and spread the teachings of Lama Tsongkhapa on person void, Lama, ornament of the Yellow Hat tradition, please remain until samsara ends. And then on the opposite page, for Lama Zopa Rinpoche, you who uphold the subduer's moral way, who serve as the bountiful bearer of all, sustaining, preserving, and spreading Manjuna's victorious doctrine, who masterfully accomplished magnificent prayers honoring the three jewels, savior of myself and others, your disciples, please, please live long. Okay? And seven green Tara mantras for Geshe Losong, health, happy life, and his quick return to the center. Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Soha. 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 Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Soha.